January 9, 2021 is the What for Pedro Show. for Pedro Show. Happy Saturday. My brother Matt at the Love Grotto. A couple of my suckers with quit in quarantine mode still, but I am not totally man alone due to those incredible software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Tom and Colin with me from USA. USA's a monster.
There you go.
Okay. And one Charlottesville, one Ann Arbor, Virginia, Michigan. If you could see my hand, people, I could show you where Ann Arbor is. US 23. It's a little about 40 miles west of Detroit. And Charlottesville, kind of middle. A little more to the northeast, maybe. But.
Middle.
Mr. Jefferson, I brought a couple of my bands to Monticello and showed them the first dome house, I think, in North America. I should tell the people, we started John Coltrane walking live 1960, and then Rapido Amigo, Quick Friend. From USA, his monster. Who wants to go first? Because I want to go through each of you little quick journey through your music thing.
Tommy, why don't you go?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Tom, please, your earliest musical recollection.
Earliest musical recollection would be, well, you know, my parents had a huge collection of classical music on LPs. And that's what was available when I was really young. And to be honest, probably the most profound one would be spinning a John Philip Sousa greatest hits record. We had these old Persian rugs, and me and my sister would put on John Philip Sousa and blast it, because it was powerful music, you know, like we were feeling it pretty hard, and we would like march around the border of the rug to John Philip Sousa. And I remember that like kind of had this weird, you know, it did that gut feeling thing to me. I was like, this is powerful, you know.
versus dancing. March.
Yeah.
You know, actually, there's a lot of shit going on in that stuff. You hear the little fife. I mean, there's like all these weird parts.
Yeah.
And John Coltrane actually, like the fucking, what's that straight sax? Huh? Alto? No. Soprano. Yeah, he brought that back because that's from John Philip Sousa days.
Also, no way.
Yeah, pinchy way. Yeah, I wouldn't fuck with you. So your folks were more like listeners instead. Was there any instruments in the pad?
Yeah, there was a piano for sure. And so I grew up taking Suzuki violin lessons, and my mom would accompany me and my sister. I played violin and she played cello. And so, yeah, my mom would play, you know, on a good week, we'd practice 4 or 5 times a week. So, and my mom could hammer stuff out, and she would play a little bit, but mostly we were just plowing through those Suzuki books.
Yeah. Did you pick the violin?
You know what? I don't honestly know. I think maybe my mom was like, do you want to play the violin? I said, okay. And my sister picked the cello, which was cool. So we had this little trio going with the, you know, violin, cello, piano. But that's a good question. I don't remember if I said, yeah, I want to play the violin.
It's a Watt from Pedro Show. There's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers. But what's the trip about the violin and cello? They're both in fifths. So a lot of drama between the strings. Yeah. Now the piano, you got a fucking button for each note. What about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Definitely in high school I was in chorus, you know, and okay, let me go farther back than that. And in Rudolf Steiner School in Ann Arbor, there was a lot of singing. You know, we'd sing a song in the morning and there'd be songs throughout the day. So definitely did a lot of singing at a young age. My parents worked at this summer camp too, and it was like a arts and science camp, and they'd get kids from all over the country, and my dad would take everybody up in this tree called the singing tree. I remember singing in there when I was really young.
Was it weird? Like, because the fucking boss is your pop. I remember dudes in Little League and Navy housing. I always, you know, it seemed like they didn't want to show like they were doing favors, so they'd be all heavy on, even though their boys got to pitch and shit.
I think it was pretty low pressure as far as like, are you, you know, it was like folk songs, like camp songs. So it wasn't like, he wasn't checking in on people and being like, are you singing the right note?
Okay.
But in for sure, when I, by the time I got to high school and I was in choir, and that was cool, you know, that choir teacher was really, he wanted to get stuff right. And so it was like really making sure you were on pitch and stuff. So that was cool. Like, it's definitely like taking it to another level of like, of working at the music, you know?
And what was the first record you bought with your own money?
You know, once again, it's a little, I think it was a gift. So this isn't my first record that I got.
No, but I ask about buying with your own money, because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money. So it's like, okay, man, what would you spend your money on, you know?
Yeah, no, it was definitely, I think it was Red Hot Chili Peppers' Uplift Mofo Party Plan. When I was like in fifth grade, and it was a buddy of mine. I didn't have MTV, but my buddy had it, and he saw some Red Hot Chili Peppers videos and was like, this band's was, you know, had that. He's like, this band's cool. We should check them out.
I think George Clinton produced that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And amazing. And this is a funny side note of it, but the thing I remember most, obviously I opened and listened to it, but I remember that excitement of like, I bought a cassette tape at the music store, and it had this like smell to it. It was like that weird sweet plastic smell. And I know that's weird, but I still remember.
I know what you're talking about.
Like the smell of that tape, and you open it up and it kind of like, it has that smell. And like, I must've had some little cassette player thing in my room. I grew up on a farm or whatever. So I remember taking it home and playing it, and like, yeah, for sure. That was the first record. I was like, you know, it was like straight, like I saw it on my buddy's house on MTV, and we were kind of like, this band's cool, we should check it out, you know?
So it's kind of for your buddy.
They made that decision to like, okay, let's go get a tape, you know?
Now, what was the first gig you went and saw?
The first like rock gig, you know, I probably saw a lot of classical music when I was younger with my parents, but the first one I like bought tickets and went to was, Midnight Oil on their first tour in Ann Arbor.
Okay, Australia guys.
Australian guys, yeah. How Do We Sleep When Our Beds Are Burning? Which was amazing. Interestingly enough, like, you know, that was sort of this anthem about Indigenous rights of Australia and Aborigine. And,
yeah, I think the singer turned into a politician.
He's a political guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Really cool guy. And, which is funny because, of course, that song was a huge hit in the United States because it was like kind of this issue that's a huge underlying issue in the U.S. But like, since it was coming from another, you know, colonial country, people were just like, oh, my gosh, this, you know, like, we can really love this. In a way, it's, to me, it's like cool that like, that, yeah, that just ended up being, I was like the right age, and like I heard that song on the radio and maybe kids were talking about it, and like, and I went, and it was at the Michigan Theater, which is a movie theater, and it's full of seats.
Oh, I know all about it. I did a gig for Ronnie.
Okay.
With the Stooges, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
It was a tribute.
It's kind of it's weird because you can't really dance. You know, you're like, remember, just everybody was standing on their seats, and it was an amazing show. Like, it was their first, I think, you know, they just had a big hit, and they were like on tour, and like, they had a trombone player and
there's some bass clef. I'll tell you, you know, 10 years arena rock, that's the way that shit was. You couldn't, you know, they were, it was bullshit. It was like club gigs. You couldn't move around. Yeah, you got seats and yeah. That's why I think the punk movement came, because of your action to that. Now,
yeah,
for USA is a monster. You're singing and doing what else?
Singing, playing drums, and then also playing
bass notes. I understand how you got on the singing, because you got singing way back in your family and in school and shit, in the summer camps. But how did you get on the fucking drums?
Oh my gosh, drums was like early high school. I got asked to be in some bands, and some kid at my high school sold me a guitar and like a little practice amp, and I got asked to be in this band with a couple other people, and I went to the first practice, and I didn't know anything about anything with rock yet. So I turned up this little amp, and it was like a bunch of people just freaking out, and I couldn't hear the guitar. So I was bummed. I was like, you know, this sucks. And, a couple practices later, there was like a, you know, the drum kit was available. And, like, this is a funny story. The guy whose drum kit it was didn't want anybody to play it, so he had, like, taken his drumsticks. So I was like, fuck it, I want to play the drums, you know, try them. I thought I could have a go at it. So I didn't, but there's no sticks. But there was these, like, curtain rods in the house.
And you beat the shit out of it.
So, and I was just like, I'm going to play. So I, like, pulled these curtain rods off. They were wood. They were more or less the shape. They're like dowel rods.
Yeah, fucking broomstick.
Yeah. So it was so rad. I was like, because it was funny. The guy was just like, okay, maybe if I like take my sticks with me, nobody will play the drums. But I was like, fuck that. So I ripped these curtain dowels off and like played and like, and then that was it. I was just like, this is what I want to do.
There's probably huge ass dimples in the heads and shit.
Yeah, and the first band I was in Ann Arbor was just basically it became 10. We would just like freak out and jam for like 2 hours, as like hard as we could, and it was super free. And at that point, I was just like, I knew that no matter what happened, like I could hear the drums, you know.
yep. The winner by default. Here, I want to play a desert. No, is it desert?
Yes. Desert, yeah.
It's desert.
I'll drink the water and I'll enjoy the sun. The mountains all surround me, but will I ever share this love with anyone? Or is this desert my apocalyptic sunsets that burn into my heart? Made me so high, I swear to you in time I'll leave this land and start and come to you. So I tried for love.
and my hand is steady. I've got the blood and the fire to make this night burn blue. Will surely do. Going on back to disaster, downhill backward with no brakes. Taking all the same chances, making the same mistakes. I think I'll kick up and bust it. Where you can look for me at One-Eyed Jack, down along where the railroad left the track. I took an early quit, picked up a pocket full of pay. I'm gonna sit right here and drink it all away. Going on downhill backward with no brakes. Taking all the same chances, making the same mistakes. If somebody starts a fuss, if somebody starts a fuss, and if somebody starts a fuss, I believe I'll kick up and bust it. Too much to drink. I'm soaking my head in the sink, and out my window I can see tomorrow's coming. Tomorrow's coming. If I could only slow this world from turning. But tomorrow's coming. And this one will be a fist in the chest. And the devil is standing at my door. Going on back to disaster, downhill backward with no taking all the same chances, making the same mistake. And if somebody starts a somebody starts a fuss, and if somebody starts a fuss, and if somebody starts a fuss, I believe I'll kick a fuss.
for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with USA is a Monster with Desert, like the Mojave out here. David Gerard put out a new ambient record. He had me aboard for the Somnambulist Part 1. Then Hans Rott with Sonny Lou. Endless Seafood, guided by voice Bob Pollard with another album, people. Numbers Band, Back to Disaster. Influential Akron band. A lot of fucking noise over there. Bombas Prendon with Cyclotron. And Foodie from Osaka with Linear Motor Car. Actually, that's a kind of a train. Like these maglevs, where they don't touch the ground. Levitate, magnetic. And then finally, USA is a Monster with Cocaine Wedding. Don't even want to know what that's about. Colin, your earliest musical recollection, please.
I would say probably my dad singing in the car. He sang all the time and would harmonize with the radio, and we would all sing along.
Oh, cool. AM radio?
I think at this point it might have been FM.
Okay. Yeah, because when I just went into Otto Watt younger man mode, and yeah, it was AM radio. Okay. I asked Tom, at the pad, was there fucking instruments?
No. My dad had a pretty good hi-fi that he got with the money from getting out of the Marine Corps, and he put it into like a reel-to-reel and a record player, good speakers. So we'd listen to music, but no instruments.
And what kind of, so he was a listener, but what was, do you listen to all kinds of music, or rock and roll, or classical, or what?
Yeah, I would say mostly rock and roll and music from when he grew up, like in the 50s.
Okay, yeah, which, a lot of rock and roll in those days.
And
then, the thing about, like, school, were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Yeah, I was in the chorus through junior high. I took some guitar lessons on the side, and I think senior year junior year I played in the jazz band for a couple months playing guitar.
Wow. And first record you bought with your own money?
I can't recollect that.
Okay. And first gig?
Well, I did see Diana Ross in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, for me, music is music. I fucking hate the idea of genre, so it's cool. It's cool. And Diana Ross, she had some pipes.
Oh, she was as big as they get.
Yeah. Good singer. Good singer. Actually, though, she's better with the other two sisters, Supremes. Yeah, that's it.
Great song.
But still, incredible lady. What about the thing after school, the basement band, the garage band, the bedroom band? Did you do that?
Yeah, definitely. We had high school bands that would practice in the basement or whatever and mostly do covers but throw in a couple originals.
Ah, so you started writing on the guitar, right?
Yes. Yeah, I started writing in junior high, I'd say.
That's great. What'd you use? Like a four-track?
Nothing. Nothing.
Oh,
I would
wow.
write the, you know, I would just write them, and
sure.
I didn't get into recording till, like, say, 19 years old.
So you would write the lyrics down on paper.
Yep.
But would you write the chords down? It was all memory rock, right?
Yeah. I'd write some of the chords down. I have a couple old silly pieces of paper with, you know, that I took real seriously at the time.
Now, was any of those bands, those after school bands, did they any of them do gigs?
We did, I would say, you know, like maybe four gigs in high school.
But mainly it was just practice, right? Just hanging
totally.
Out. Yeah. And what was the first gig like?
I'd say the first one was probably, I'll tell you what, there was one gig of the three or whatever where we played at a, like, VFW hall at one of the band members' parents' friends' kegger hangout, and they tacitly allowed us to get wasted and jam for hours, and it was really profound, you know, to stretch out and improvise. And
all Maracho.
And that was a big deal, you know, at the time to go, okay, wow.
So the gig was a success.
Definitely. There was a guy there that jammed with us. He came up with his harmonicas, and I guess we did some blues, and he sang and stuff. And he told us, now, again, doesn't matter if it's real or not, but he told us he used to write songs with Geddy Lee and play in the Allman Brothers. and we were kids, and he said, you guys got it. Like, I'm going to make some calls, you know? It was like that.
I thought it was going to be like that Cat Beefheart song, Give Me That Harp, Boy, you know? Supposedly him and Lil Walter had it was at the Whiskey. They had like a little harmonica dually in the head. Because everybody thought it was him making fun of that fat dude in Canned Heat. But in the Mike Barnes book, they talk about it. Actually, him and Lil Walter having a dually in the pisser at the Whiskey up in West Hollywood.
Wow.
Because he does say, it ain't no fat man's toy. So I guess they, not the alley guy, but the big man, right?
Huh.
But it wasn't about the big man. But that's anyway. He got you all foamed up. He got you. He never made the calls, did he?
No, God, no, no. And I kind of maybe tried to Google him once. I don't have even a name, you know. But you know, but I haven't so far seen a lot of co-writers, you know, from Connecticut on Rush Records or whatever.
Well, the drummer man. Well, I guess he wasn't the original guy, but the second guy. Actually, I think we lost him last year with cancer or something. But he wrote their words, right?
Yes, he did.
You know, I don't know a lot about him, but if you play in a trio, everybody thinks you're way into Rush. You know, because nobody remembers fucking Cream or the Hendrix Experience. You know, it's got to be Rush. I've had to answer so many questions. I finally got to meet the dudes because Les Claypool's way into them, and I was torn with him, and here's Mr. Lee. Actually, very nice guys.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I didn't meet the drummer man, but I met the two original guys, Alex, I think, and Geddy Lee. And they were, it was at a hockey thing, you know, I think where the Maple Leafs play in Toronto or something. But, isn't it trippy about that? You know, I saw them twice, and both times, and they were like 40 years apart, and I fell asleep at both gigs.
Yeah.
It could only last like 15, 20
minutes.
No disrespect, though. People at the end of the first hour.
we used to have to name drop to get across the Canadian border, like before we had work permits. You know, they would always ask us, we'd have some lie, like, we're going to go record in a studio, we're not going to play gigs. And they'd be like, well, you live in Brooklyn, New York, why are you coming to Canada? And we'd just be like, dude, Rush, you kidding me? Like, we want to record where Rush recorded, you know?
They had an ELP band, too, in the 70s called Triumvirate. Anyway, we're at the end of the first hour, 2021, January 9, special guest Tom and Colin. Hold tight for hour two. January 9, 2021, it's second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
There's a story behind the legend of the warrior Geronimo. When a bruised and held captive, he said these words for his people. I cannot think that we are you. The fourth born of Angel Dread. When the world was all in darkness, the feathered tribe and eagle chief wanted sunlight, so they made war on the human eating beast. These birds of legend were the victors.
might understand that his people would not survive exile from their land.
Thank you.
Shit in there, huh? Pedro Show, start off the second hour, USA's Monster, Geronimo, Sam Bennett, Tokyo with Dry County, Monkey David Wine from Scott H. Barum, Ruby Reusable from Jerome Parker Wells out of St. Louis. And somehow, USA is a monster. So how'd this band get together? Tom, Colin, how you meet?
Well, we met. I put up an ad in a record store in Boston, and Tom answered it. And we met up and started jamming and writing songs immediately and got a bass player and did a band for 5 years in the 90s called Bull Roar.
I'm curious, what did the ad say?
It said, it was like, I'm bad at art, so it was very ugly.
Sure. So the ad had no visual appeal, but it was just like a list of 50 bands that I love. And not just bands, just oddball stuff. I guess Hank Williams, the Minutemen, the Beatles, Bad Brains, just sort of all over the place, probably. And Tommy answered it, and we started jamming and writing immediately.
Wow. And you gave a name, but that's when I lost you.
Right. And we got a bass player, and it was the three of us, and we were called Bull Roar. And we played for 5 years.
Bull Roar.
In the 90s.
Bull, like
Roarer.
Yeah, like a bull that was roaring.
Yeah, there's a also it's an instrument, aboriginal instrument that for like war. And
do you blow it? So do you beat it?
You swing it.
You swing it. Okay.
But if a bunch of people swing them at the same time,
yeah,
the tones are all microtonally different, of course, and it sounds like the end of the world.
Ah, so it's kind of like them tubers?
Kinda, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, those things, sometimes you'll hear them on reggae dub mix things. Okay, so why did this band end?
Well, I tell you what, the bass player basically quit. I guess that was why it ended. But that band, we got to do our first touring.
Yeah.
And basically what happened was we did our first nationwide tour. It was like, let's say, 5 weeks. And I remember when we left for the tour, we didn't have many new songs. We were kind of playing the same songs at that point. Like, we were kind of running out of steam, essentially.
Right.
So I was worried, like, this might be weird to play the same songs every night. Now, the songs were really noisy and had a lot of improv within the structures, but they were structured. We were a tight band. But it was pretty crazy. But by playing the same songs every night, it took it to this spiritual level that I got fully addicted to. And then the band broke up as soon as the tour was over, but me and Tommy decided to keep going and started USA's a Monster, you know, months later.
But just you two without the bass man.
Yeah, the bass man moved to Ibiza and
dance his brains out. Here, I want to play Gray Owl with an E.
Gray
with an E.
Until his wife, Anna Herio, protested the cruel killing of these living things. This was the start for a change of heart. From now on, all creatures they would love as children. Already keen on things Indian, Archie started writing and would sign his pages thus: I am Gray Owl, I have spoken. Exposed at the end to be an English gentleman. Great.
character, a blue-eyed Indian, writer, conservationist, friend of the beaver, voice of the forest, exposed at the end to be an English gentleman. What a figure that is, Buckskin, feathers, long hair, and moccasins. Iowa, the man of fiction, come to life in strange conditions. What a
Thank you.
Relating to you some, I think it was Bertrand Russell, he said, two people divided by a common language, huh? bonnet and hood and windscreen, windshield and yeah. trunk and boot and shit like that. Gray with an right. E. So Gray Al, USA's monster. Yeah, I can hear you talking this way from Transit Drum. Tommy Smith with Golgotha Pinch Front Crown. That's Tom Smith from To Live and Shave in L.A. He was on a couple episodes ago. I see you. The new Harnessians. I guess they're in harnesses. I think these are New England cats. And Plus Dog Plus, weaponized education. I love guys. You know, I couldn't decide whether to send you my hardcore band or my experimental band. Man, why can't you just fucking have a band, dude? And USA is a monster with We Are Not Alone. So, did you start the band just as a duo, or did you look for another bass man?
Well, when we, the first USA is a monster iteration, I think, was four, and then it was seven people, and then it went to two. The beginning of it was a little messy as far as what we were trying to do. But when we started the band, we had a sort of a venue in Charlottesville, Virginia, and we were hosting shows as well as trying to write music and perform ourselves. So after almost a year of doing that, and it was great, we brought a lot of good bands and had a good scene in Charlottesville at the time. But we realized that we would...
Is this around the time there was is this time around when they had Tokyo Rose?
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
I played there a couple times.
You played there before?
A couple times.
Yep. Yeah, that was the sort of the indie, you know, the rock club. They had a great, they would have goth night there. We would go dance at goth night every week. yeah, and we had friends that worked there, and I think I actually did sound there for a couple of months.
So when you put this new band, this new prodge together, you left Bull Roar behind. You weren't trying to do, like, none of the songs spilled over to the next band?
Not at all. That's not how we do it. It's interesting. We wanted to start fresh. Hey, Colin, I don't know if you can hear, but your mic is turned off, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. I turn it off when I'm not talking.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because he's making a buttload of fucking noise. Very, very kind of you, Colin. So, like a clean slate thing. So, what was this first four-man or four-person band version like? Live for Pedro show. Yeah. Had a little fuck A-U, A-N-T-N-T moment there. And back with the... Tom and Colin here about how they got their band together. So this first four-person version, you didn't have to worry about looking for gigs because you were putting on gigs. So you would, like, foist your proj. Maybe that's strong language. I'm sorry. I mean, did you guys open up or did you headline? I mean...
Yeah, depending on what the show was, maybe we would play. I mean, it was pretty... We did some ridiculous things where we would maybe... We didn't have a lot of songs written at that point, so we would do, you know, I don't really think we did some jamming, but the point was is that we kind of realized, like, having the venue, we were just putting a lot of energy into creating the space where kind of anything could happen, and, you know, after a year of that, you kind of get tired of cleaning up other people's messes and, you know, living in a venue is tough or whatever, but anyways...
You wanted to benefit from your work, from your efforts.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Now, how did it get to seven dudes?
Well, so me and Colin moved down there, and I think we invited a couple guys from the Northeast down to play with us. Or we invited one guy, and he brought, like, two other guys with him. And then it kind of just became – then it grew from there. So I think our first – we did some short tours on the South where I think it was a seven-piece and pretty unproductive. Like, we really – I think a lot of equipment got destroyed and we were you know, the music wasn't really developed yet, but we just had all this energy and stuff. One, I guess, in that scene, somewhat famous show is that we played at a convenience store in Greensboro, and I mean, it was gnarly. Like a lot of stuff got destroyed.
Greensboro, I think Professor Eugene Chapman lives there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a chaotic gig and stuff was destroyed.
Yeah, we had to basically grab our instruments and run out of there. And but I mean, you know, it was just like one of those. It was like, can we pull? Let's just do something. The guys that set it up figured it could happen, and it did. But I think that some, I don't know, probably not that much stuff got badly destroyed, but you know, stuff got knocked over or whatever. But anyways, so.
Convenience really store, you know, that's how they call them in Japan. And by the way, 7-Eleven is actually from there. Did you know that?
Oh, wow. Is it the same thing as Lawson's?
That's a competitor, but it's actually called 7-Eleven Sunkiss.
Okay.
Yeah. We're at the end of the second hour here at January 9, 2021, edition Wild Pedro Show. Special guest Colin Tom. Hold tight for hour three. January 9, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
They come say, strong and wise, he realized he must form a confederation. All people red, a last desperate plan. Yes, Tecumseh, you truly understood the spirit of hope. Ohio,
Watt for Pedro show. We start off the third hour with USA's monster, Tecumseh. Now, he was close to, I think, like around the Toledo area, Maumee River and that stuff, right? Michigan and Ohio had a war.
Yeah.
I think the feds, the only way they stopped it was they took some of Wisconsin. They gave them what turned out to be iron mines and shit. Really strange, our history. Also the current stuff. Then Crane with Special Blues and Tripa Bo Bip from USA's. What about this album? Where'd you guys do this?
The new one?
No, yeah, what I'm playing on.
The one that Tripa Bo Bip is on?
It's hard for me to know which is which because you guys just flowed me to tunes.
Well, we have a new record. And
have I been playing stuff on that?
Yeah. Okay. Rappy Doe's off of that and a couple others.
Okay, let's talk about the new one since we're in the third hour.
Sure. We stopped playing in 2009 and took, let's say 5-6 years off and then slowly started making a record and just finished it and came out in October of 2020.
And where'd you do it at?
Tommy would fly to New York to do Basic Tracks, where I was living up until December.
Oh, this was the Brooklyn thing.
Yeah. When we were an active band touring and whatnot, for the majority of that time, we were in Brooklyn.
So you left the club in Charlottesville.
Yeah, quickly, in fact. And then traveled and then ended up in Brooklyn for years.
Okay. And that's where you made your records. And then finally this guy here, and this one was done. Because, Tom ends up moving to Ann Arbor, right?
Exactly, yeah. We stopped working, and Tommy moved to Ann Arbor, and then I stayed in New York, and we just took a break and then slowly started putting music together.
You know, I've recorded in Brooklyn. Tony Mamone has got a studio, Studio G, with Joel Thompson.
I've recorded there as well. He's is amazing.
Joel Hamilton, that's it.
Tony is special.
Well, Tony, man, he's a bass man from Peru, but a big hero of mine.
Yeah, he's a magical presence in the studio, too.
Man, is he a... Yeah, he's a kindred spirit. So I'm curious, where did you guys record in Brooklyn?
We recorded. I had this little studio. We recorded there in our friend Justin's space. Pretty low budget. Spaces with mics. Yeah, it was great.
The record sounds good. The stuff you gave me is great.
Thank you.
Hard. A little brick wall. I'm not going to say K-Rock, but Papa Roach, but maybe next time let breathe a little bit. But, man, you guys play great, and you write bitchin' tunes.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, Colin spent a lot of time with the production and did lots of work and mixed. And after we had all the tracks recorded, Colin put many hours into the production.
But essentially... The 4-man version gone, the 7-man version gone. You went back to the 2 guys, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's only you 2 on this.
There's a couple other people for a solo or 2.
Okay.
But it's me and Tom, yeah.
And the way you wrote it, did you guys, make demos?
Yes, very rudimentary lo-fi demos and MIDI and whatever and would... email them back and forth to each other.
Right, until Tom made the big airplane ride. Okay.
Exactly.
And then, interesting. So this must have been a couple of years ago then, right?
It took like 4 or 5 years to make.
Right. But, I mean, you probably finished up before this COVID-19, right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, plans for tour kind of got put on hold.
Well, we weren't planning on touring. We were hoping to do a record release show or 2, but actually, to perform it, we're back to a 7-piece.
Okay.
And it was
going to be daunting anyway, so it was sort of, wow, we don't have to actually play, but...
What about this tune, Verbs? Is this from the new record?
Yes, it is.
Okay, let's play it.
The Lord.
the foils fall on the ground. Peaceful you wait for spring.
And when the ice begins to melt in the sun, you will begin to find a song, but what you long under the noise.
Oh!
Watt for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Verbs from USA is a Monster. On the Banks of the River Swale from University Challenge. And finally, Sunset at the End of the Industrial Age by USA is a Monster. And so where can people find you guys on the internet?
We're on Bandcamp. I guess it's called The USA is a Monster. USA is a Monster is one word.
I mean, I really like Bandcamp and stuff, but you guys don't have your own personal website.
No. In fact, when we broke up in 2009, the next morning after our last show, I just deleted everything.
So that last show was probably a real good one.
It was. The show was.
That was a good show.
Then why'd you scissor all the shit?
The internet, I have a strange relationship with it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you and Tom trade files? Or you just went for in-person appearances?
Yeah, we trade files.
Okay, so it's not all bad then.
No. This last record is the only one we wrote that way where we were just, we didn't see each other that much. We're just sending each other tracks and listening to them and working on them. So.
Right. And that's what it means. So how long altogether has the band been together, including the hiatus?
2001 or two.
So 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. 2000.
Okay.
2000.
Either and or one of you have advice to somebody to keep a proj going 20 years? Advice to keep a proj going 20. How do you keep something going 20 years long and even with a big hiatus in the middle? What's your advice for something like that?
Well, I could jump in a little in that once you develop a process, it needs to live. So it's kind of beyond you, and you get addicted to making that process thrive.
I like that. So in a way, it becomes its own living thing.
100%. And I hope that people can find that.
Yeah. Anything else?
Well, yeah, it's spiritual connection helps, you know.
Absolutely.
We're pretty lucky that we have that connection, that we can just get together and make some music, you know?
Absolutely. I that's beautiful also. In fact, what you both said for me, very inspiring. Thank you so much. And by proven by example, by this record, beautiful music. I can't wait till you're going to make another one, right?
It might take another 10 years.
That's all right.
slow but steady, yeah.
You know what Orson Welles said, right? No wine before it's time. Probably some fucking two-buck Chuck Palmasan bullshit. Screw on top. Tom, Colin, both you guys, you're beautiful inspirations for me. Thank you so much. Big honor for me to have you on the show.
Huge honor, Watt.
Okay. Yeah, huge honor for us.
Okay, we keep on keeping on. People, it's been the January 9, 2021 Just Watt Peter, so keep your powder dry.